nuclear legislation, and dirty tricks. Since 1976, California law has banned the building of any new nuclear reactors until there is a solution to the problem of where to bury the deadly radioactive nuclear waste that they create. But new proposed legislation, HB 305, has been called a stealth attack on that 49-year-old ban that will allow for untold numbers of small modular nuclear reactors, which don't exist yet, to be built around the state. As bad as the bill itself is, the manipulation by highly paid lobbyists and political hacks to prevent the public from being able to comment on the legislation may be even worse. It frustrates even the work of an experienced, highly skilled former reporter who is both a transportation and energy specialist, and she tells you,
any input, written or verbal, is required 1 week before the vote. And of course, most people aren't finding out about this until that 1 week deadline has passed. And that's one of the reasons they're keeping all this under wraps, because I was told on Wednesday, for example, that public watchdogs could have had public input on Wednesday that would have fallen into the 6 business days. But guess what? It was 4:35 in the afternoon, and that was due before 5 o'clock this past Wednesday. I mean, if that isn't revealing how urgently they want to hide this from the public, I don't know what does.
Well, when Nina Babiarz, co-founder of Public Watchdogs, shows us how desperate the nuclear industry is to not allow public input to the legislative process on this bill, and uses a whole string of stupid legislator tricks in order to enforce that, you see how manipulated we all are into sitting in that awful, deadly, dangerous seat that we all share.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's the bomb.
Welcome to Nuclear Hot Seat, the weekly international news magazine keeping you up to date on all things nuclear from a different perspective. We're a show for people who know nothing about nuclear who want to know something, and people who know something about nuclear who would like to know just a little bit more. My name is Libby Halevi. I'm the producer and host, as well as a survivor of the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island from just 1 mile away. So I know what can happen when those nuclear so-called experts get it wrong. This week, we learn about a stealth attack bill in California that would open the floodgates to allow the building of hundreds, if not thousands, of small modular nuclear reactors around the state. And we reveal the legislative shenanigans being employed to block public input to this new nuclear permissions bill. We talk with Charles Langley and Nina Babiarz of Public Watchdogs to learn not just the issues represented by the bill, but the dirty tricks being used to exclude public input to the legislative process. We will also have nuclear news from around the world, Numbnuts of the Week for outstanding nuclear boneheadedness, Alistair Burnett of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons with the monthly ICAN update, Jack Cohen-Joppa of the Nuclear Resister with another story of our shared history of successful activist resistance, and more honest nuclear information than a full week of MSNBC and Fox broadcasting combined. All of it coming up in just a few moments. Today is Tuesday, April 29, 2025, and here is this week's nuclear news from a different perspective. In the UK, the Lakenheath Alliance for Peace peace camp is over, but they're not going away. This coalition of groups is dedicated to preventing the return of U.S. nuclear weapons to Air Force Lakenheath. We'll link to the entire menu of actions that took place, which are glorious to contemplate. But two highlights. On day 12, 12 women, intersex, non-binary, and trans activists aged from 24 to 91, held a topless blockade at the main gate of RAF Lakenheath, denouncing the deadly entanglements between military emissions, climate destruction, authoritarianism, and genocide. There were 3 arrests. And on day 13, over 250 protested outside the gates, with many taking part in the blockade. 7 people have been arrested. Here with our monthly ICAN update, direct from the headquarters of the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons in Geneva, Switzerland, is ICANN's head of media, Alistair Burnett.
Hi, this is Alistair Burnett from ICANN in Geneva with April's news roundup from the campaign. In this year of 80th anniversary commemorations, we're making our plans to mark it here in Geneva, where there'll be an open-air art exhibition and events about what happened at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Our executive director, Melissa Park, will be joining events in New Mexico to mark 80 years since the first nuclear detonation, the Trinity test. Then she'll be travelling to Japan for the ceremonies and events in both Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Keep an eye on our website and social media channels to follow these important anniversaries, which sadly will probably be the last major commemoration the survivors of the terrible events of 1945 will be able to participate in. Work is underway on this year's nuclear weapons spending report. This is ICANN's major annual publication and is regarded as the most authoritative data on the amount of money spent, or rather wasted, globally on nuclear weapons each year. Last year, the report, which comes out in June, showed $91 billion was spent in 2023, with the United States accounting for over half of that figure. We'll soon see how much was blown in 2024. ICANN is also attending the last preparatory committee meeting in New York of the Non-Proliferation Treaty before its next review conference next year. The NPT has been deadlocked for more than a decade and, unfortunately, expectations for any agreement on progressing the treaty are very low. This meeting comes against the background of escalating nuclear rhetoric from some leaders here in Europe, as you heard last month. Meanwhile, in South Korea, politicians continue to openly discuss whether that country should develop its own nuclear weapons. In other words, this is a dangerous moment. So I spoke to my colleague, Florian Ebelenkamp, who leads our advocacy with NATO states, about the NPT meeting and whether it can help to reduce nuclear tensions.
This meeting is supposed to formulate recommendations for the upcoming review conference of the NPT. And it's supposed to cover the 3 pillars of the NPT: disarmament, non-proliferation, and civil use of nuclear energy. And it's always a big debate, you know, whether there can be an agreement. Prospects aren't looking very good, I would say, let alone to make substantive for the review of the non-proliferation treaty.
Where do we see the divisions between the member states of the NPT?
There's a lot of divisions and a lot of problems, frankly, with the NPT. One is that the treaty rests on what they call the grand bargain, sort of being a deal that 5 states are allowed to have nuclear weapons, but commit to complete nuclear disarmament, and all other countries are not allowed to have nuclear weapons. Now, on the one side, it has worked okay, as in very few other countries acquired nuclear weapons, and the non-nuclear weapon states have to a large part stuck to their obligations. But what hasn't happened at all is the nuclear disarmament part. So the nuclear weapon states, the 5 NPT nuclear weapon states, Russia, China, US, UK, and France, still have nuclear weapons. They're actually modernizing them. They're upgrading their arsenals. They are putting their nuclear weapons in other countries' territories and so on. So that's maybe the biggest cleavage in the treaty, and something that's not talked about enough. And maybe even more fundamentally, we've seen a reversion of the trend of stockpiles going down globally in the last couple of years. So for decades after the Cold War, the numbers went down. We went from almost 100,000 nuclear weapons globally to 15,000 and a bit below. But now this trend is going the other direction. We would hope that the NPT would address these issues, but we'll see in the upcoming week.
Given what some European leaders have been saying and politicians in South Korea about potentially acquiring nuclear weapons or extending the protection of other countries' nuclear weapons, such as France protecting the rest of the EU, this has been a debate now in Europe for the past few months. That seems to run counter in some ways to the spirit, but also the letter of the NPT. Is there any chance that the non-nuclear weapon states, for example, the states that are members of the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons, will challenge the nuclear weapon states and their allies in the NPT forum?
Yes, that's very likely. We're certainly pushing for that. And the way we've heard back from some of the TPNW states is that they are very keen to make this debate happen. It's, as you say, it's against the spirit, if not the letter, of the NPT, which is designed to prevent proliferation if then countries debate proliferating nuclear weapons, whether through a nuclear sharing arrangement or actually acquiring nuclear weapons themselves. The question is, can the whole of the NPT community then agree on language that would make it to an outcome document? Because, yeah, maybe they will talk about it, but I don't see a way for them to agree on a legal consequence of such rhetoric, which obviously undermines the NPT. And by the way, also, firstly, it's highly dangerous as it normalizes nuclear weapons, and it also sort of legitimizes nuclear threats by other countries. So it's a very short-sighted idea to normalize nuclear weapons proliferation out of panic about future US positions towards NATO or Europe.
The treaty has effectively been deadlocked for over a decade now. There's been no consensus and no agreement on taking it forward at all. So what you're saying is there's very little chance that that's going to happen either in this meeting or in the review conference next year.
Yeah, that's my understanding. And when you speak to diplomats from the NPT states, there's quite a great deal of cynicism, I would say, about the proceedings of this conference specifically, but also the treaty in a bigger sense, that, as you said, since 2010, there was no outcome agreement. But of course, the treaty remains relevant, as in it's almost universal, and we have to work with it. So yeah, we'll go there, we'll make our points, we'll hope to shape the debate in a constructive way. And of course, we'll promote the TPNW as a complementary treaty that reinforces the norms in the NPT.
That was Florian Eblenkamp. And this is Alistair Burnett, ending this news roundup for Nuclear Hot Seat.
And now, from the sublime to the ridiculous, here's...
Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Nuclear Hot Seat, Num Nuts of the Week.
Well, the nuclear industry sure knows how to get to its young people. In order to court Gen Z, nuclear promoters threw an atomic-themed rave dance party as part of San Francisco Climate Week. They even got Oppenheimer to attend. No, not the original one. He's been dead for a long time. This is Charles Oppenheimer, grandson of the father of the atomic bomb, who jumped around a packed dance floor to the tune of Britney Spears' Toxic. This rave for nuclear energy was the brainchild of Oppenheimer's friend Ryan Pickering, an energy policy researcher and nuclear energy apologist, a consultant for Confidential, a consulting firm. Pickering dropped $10,000 on the rave and said, "This is the best money I ever spent." The point? To spread the good word about nuclear power to young people who otherwise don't know anything about it and get them fired up about California's recent legislative push to approve small modular nuclear reactors and put them all over the state. Pickering admitted his goal is to get California to overturn its 1976 moratorium on building new nuclear power plants until a permanent waste solution is approved. You'll learn all about the truth of this particular piece of legislation in today's featured interview. But as for the numbnutsery, among the 350-plus participants were members of the Berkeley NICE Club, which stands for Nuclear is Clean Energy. Not, but that's the name of the group, and it exists in large part because UC Berkeley is the only California college to offer nuclear engineering as an undergraduate major. While many dropped in for the atomic sunrise and cobalt core cocktails, as the dancing revved up, LED visuals flashed hashtag legalize nuclear, and people raised their arms and whooped. Talk about your brainwashing. Your credentials, other than a genetic link to his grandfather, is the founder of the San Francisco-based Oppenheimer Project, a nonprofit focused on reframing nuclear power from a doomsday device to a sustainable energy solution. Oppenheimer said, "People should be less afraid of nuclear energy. It's only bad if you make weapons out of it. It's good if you make energy out of this. But where do you think the plutonium for nuclear weapons comes from? It's all produced in the waste stream of every nuclear reactor that has ever existed. So there's no separation between weapons and energy. And if you think nukes are clean and green, just go swimming around in a spent fuel pool and enjoy all that radioactive water. And that's why, to the brainiacs, the propagandists, who so smugly co-opt youth culture in order to promote nuclear, you are this week's
Nuclear Hot Seat, Numbnuts of the Week.
We'll have this week's featured interview in just a moment, but first, I know you care about getting honest nuclear news. After all, that's why you're here at Nuclear Hot Seat, hopefully every week. And you're getting verifiable, cutting-edge nuclear information that has been sourced, checked, and footnoted for accuracy, despite my sometimes humorous approach to delivering it. Plus, we have interviews with people who are genuine experts on the nuclear industry, its manipulations of public perception of nukes, and its impact on life, health, and our shared genetic future. We tell you stories of brave people on the front lines of anti-nuclear activism around the world, their triumphs and challenges. We get under the manicured surface of industry-influenced mainstream media nuclear stories to provide context and continuity, because we want you to understand what the issues are, what we are up against, and what any one of us can do about it. But to keep this show going, we need your support. Translation? Donations. Nuclear Hot Seat cannot survive without them. So if you're grateful for the information you get from the show and have ever thought to donate, now is the perfect time to start. And we make it easy. Just go to nuclearhotseat.com and click on the red donate button. If you have Zelle, you can send money directly to info@nuclearhotseat.com. Nuclear Hot Seat is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, which means that anything you donate is tax deductible. Don't wait. Go now, right now, to nuclearhotseat.com to donate. And whatever you can do to help, know that you are making a difference to the show and to the world. And that, as always, I am deeply grateful that you are listening and that you care. Now, here's this week's featured interview. There is a full court press taking place here in California to not only approve but build the not-yet-existent small modular nuclear reactors all over the state. The campaign is by pro-nuclear forces and is now focused on negating a 49-year-old California law which prohibits building any new nuclear reactors until there is a solution to the problem of where to bury the deadly radioactive waste they produce. Spoiler alert, there is none. So not only is this law a bad idea and possibly illegal, the nukesters and their legislative lackeys are pulling out a whole roster of dirty tricks to prevent the public from having our say on it. Today's guests pay close attention to these matters and are fearless in calling out the bill and the bad behavior, making nuclear interests accountable to the public. Public Watchdogs is a nonpartisan, nonprofit chartered to the state of California to protect California businesses and residents from the California Public Utilities Commission and other rogue government agencies. They've got their hands full. Charles Langley is executive director, and Nina Babiar is director of development for Public Watchdogs. I spoke with them on Friday, April 25th, 2025. Charles Langley and Nina Babiar. Thank you so much for joining us today on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Glad to be here.
Thanks, Leapy.
Let's start out with where the state of California currently stands as regards nuclear reactors. We're talking about the legal stance of the state.
Well, in 1976, there was a California law that was passed that would prohibit any and all new nuclear plants in California until the radioactive nuclear waste problem is solved.
You can't build a nuclear reactor in California until we have a national nuclear waste storage repository, which realistically is never going to happen. So what the nuclear industry is trying to do with Assembly Bill 305 is say, we're not going to worry about that. We're just going to build these teeny tiny small modular reactors. They're new advanced reactors. They can't melt down. They're just wonderful. And we really don't have to worry too much about the nuclear waste, even though it's deadly for millions of years.
The facts remain that small nuclear modular reactors really aren't that small. Some of them can be 35 acres as opposed to 500 acres of a traditional nuclear plant. But these are not necessarily small. They're just small enough to be peppered all over the state of California. And the other fact that should be recognized is that small modular nuclear reactors, number one, are currently unlicensed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. The NRC has just given them a basic design certification. So what we're talking about is not only not licensed, but it was advertised in the Federal Register that the licensing of these would not even occur until probably 2027. And I say that because we're bringing to the attention of some of these elected officials, they don't necessarily want to be voting for nuclear reactors that are unlicensed in California. The other fact is that these small modular nuclear reactors, in the manner of which they generate energy, also generate more radioactive nuclear waste than a traditional nuclear power plant. So, you know, there's other facts that should be addressed to these uninformed, uneducated elected officials before they vote.
One of the things that I have heard from several people I've interviewed on the show is that small actually refers to how much energy is capable of being put out by these units. And it is much smaller than that of one of the larger nuclear reactors that have already been in existence. And that's one of the reasons why the proportion of waste to the energy that's created is so out of balance as well.
Yeah, generally speaking, it's a small modular reactor is anything that's under 300 megawatt hours. So that's a huge amount of electricity. But it could be something like, for example, there's a company out here locally that wants to create school bus sized nuclear reactors that might power a few houses at the end of a cul-de-sac or a small factory or something like that. This particular nuclear power plant that AB 305 is sort of tailored to help out is actually, it has a 35-acre footprint. It's a pretty big nuclear power plant.
So that brings us to California AB 305, a House bill. What is it and what is it intended to do?
It's specifically written in a manner to exempt, it's for an exemption of new small module nuclear reactors, an exemption from that law. And so two really questionable approaches Public Watchdogs is focusing on. Number one, why would the California Assembly Committee on Natural Resources that has absolutely no jurisdiction over nuclear anything be the committee that is voting on this exemption of California law? I'll tell you why. The only thing that they could exempt is the land use, because that's the only jurisdiction that they have. And that's the only thing that they needed in order to move this thing along without anybody realizing what was going on.
So what would the exemption allow them to do?
Put small modular nuclear reactors anywhere and everywhere they want in the state of California. So, you know, you got to think in terms of this waste. Now we have some very large deposits. San Onofre is not only 3.6 million pounds, but it's sitting 108 feet from the Pacific Ocean. And nobody even wants to talk about accelerated sea level rise being a threat. And it is a threat to what we're dealing with. So if you're talking about small modular nuclear reactors, you've got radioactive nuclear waste buried in basically everybody's backyard.
And the troubling part of it, Levy, is they're trying to push this through with no public hearings. I call it tapeworm legislation because it was born like a tapeworm in the filthy, infested bowels of government. And the minute it sees the light of day, it will shrivel up and die. And they're trying to sneak this one through.
I have a deep concern And it's integrated into many things that are in our California politics today. And that is simply this, that there's something horribly wrong in California, a legislative process, when our elected officials don't want their constituents to know what they're doing. And that's exactly what's going on with AB 305. They have ripped it from the vote on last Monday. They never announced when the new vote would be. We're on it making calls every since Monday to find out when this thing has been rescheduled, if it's going to go to the Utilities and Energy Committee, and getting no answers, including to the person that was responsible for posting that new hearing on the 28th, that voting hearing on the 28th, as well as the date that is due for the public to have input. You know, you got to think about this because taxpayers are not only paying for everything, but the ratepayers are paying for all of the tab of decommissioning and burying this radioactive nuclear waste. We have a right to know. The public has a right to know. I mean, my goodness, think of the long range consequences of small nuclear reactors being placed all over the state of California. I mean, think of what future generations have been dealt with just with San Onofre and Diablo Canyon. But what a mess would be leaving them with radioactive waste all over the state.
Who or what is behind California AB 305 and this push to get in a stealth way new nuclear reactors, the small modular nuclear reactors, exempt from the previous law?
It's obvious to us. It's the nuclear industry. And one of the other things we're questioning is fair political practices, whether or not the elected officials that have authored this bill have been propped up with utility funds, campaign funds.
Yeah, I think to be fair, there may be a lot of money coming out of Silicon Valley because they're concerned about the increasing energy demands that are expected from artificial intelligence. So we're probably seeing a lot of funding for this from Silicon Valley and the big tech companies.
Is there any expectation of when this vote is going to happen? And what are the plans between now and then to build pressure to eliminate it, oppose it, publicize it? What's Public Watchdog doing?
Well, we have good news, Libby. We've put together a petition at publicwatchdogs.org, then /AB305. Anyone listening to this broadcast can go visit that right now, fill it in, and click send, and in about 10 or 15 seconds, and that's going to go to all of the assembly members that are getting ready to vote yes on this thing. And we're hoping to see a 10 or 20,000 responses, just flood them with a protest.
One of the things that we are doing full court press and in collaboration with San Clemente Green, Gary Hedrick at San Clemente Green, as well as Samuel Lawrence Foundation, is this petition. And we're inviting any other nonprofits that want to join on this so that we can leverage everybody's database and get the type of response that Charles was just referring to across the state. And of course, we're contacting those up in Northern California as well, because we want to stop this thing in its tracks. This is the very first piece of legislation, and we want to send a message across the bow that this industry needs to understand that this will not be tolerated. We're not even going to let it go through the entire legislative process. We're going to try to stop it in its tracks.
Let's look at the public involvement aspect of this. When there is a hearing that is scheduled, what kind of organization or response or planning goes into those people who want to have some say, some direct input to the legislators on the issue?
Well, first of all, you need to take note that any input, written or verbal, is required 1 week before the vote. And of course, most people aren't finding out about this until that 1 week deadline has passed. And that's one of the reasons they're keeping all this under wraps, because I was told on Wednesday, for example, that public watchdogs could have had public input on Wednesday that would have fallen into the 6 business days. But guess what? It was 4:35 in the afternoon, and that was due before 5 o'clock this past Wednesday. I mean, if that isn't revealing how urgently they want to hide this from the public, I don't know what does. And now that they've set a new date that they can't tell the public what the new date is, because they know that the public is going to have to respond 1 week prior to, and they want to eliminate that opportunity.
With the possibility of responding, can this be done online? Should we find out about the date and time and where we need to send things? Does it have to be done in person? And how does that get arranged?
It can only be done in writing 1 week before the vote. And when you go into the hearing, unless you have the time and the money to fly to Sacramento, the public is not invited to make any comments by calling in. There's no phone number to call in. It's simply watch now.
And that's why we really encourage people to go to our website at publicwatchdogs.org/AB305 and sign that petition, hit send, and tell all your friends. We
Yeah.
need them to be swamped with emails.
The public has power. And the only thing keeping the public from having power is their lack of the realization that they've got it, you know? I mean, I think it was quite revealing a couple of years ago on AB 205. And that was the legislation that was put through a similar process, abbreviated public input, not 1 minute of public hearings. And that's the assembly bill that gave us that new fixed fee that's on everybody's electric bill. Also, the history of that was the legislation where 22 assembly members of the California Assembly held a press conference saying that they were going to have to introduce a brand new bill because AB 205 was so egregious to their constituents that came into their offices and the district offices and demanded that they do something. And what did they do? They introduced another bill under another number without 1 minute of public hearing, and it got through the process, and that's why you have a fixed fee on your electric bill these days. So we cannot afford to just let them give us what they want to give us. We need to demand what we're entitled to.
These tactics, typical not only in California but elsewhere, when it comes to the nuclear industry wanting to change legislation or pass legislation that is in their favor.
Oh, yeah, it's par for the course. I've seen energy reform bills where they've literally hired 5 lobbyists for every assembly member or Senate member in the California Senate. So when they hear from the people and they hear from the people in force, it means a lot. In fact, I've been told by one state senator that as few as 5 complaints or letters on a specific issue are enough to let them know that there's a groundswell of opposition. You know, it's very easy to feel discouraged in today's political climate. But if you think about that, if you think 5 letters can change a senator's view on a specific topic, that's power. You're dealing with real power. And we need to show them our power right now, because right now, the only people they're hearing from is the utility industry and the artificial intelligence industry that needs a lot of nuclear power. They think they do. We don't think they do. We think we can do it with solar and alternative energy.
Is anyone trying to do it with solar and alternative energy?
Well, there's another bill that is in jeopardy. That's just another completely different issue, but it's also extremely time sensitive. You've got an assembly member that spent like 30 years working for Edison International and Southern California Edison that now sits on the Utility and Energy Committee. And guess what? She's introducing legislation to stamp out solar. And that, you know, all this is about the fact that the utility companies can't compete. And they've got the anointed partners of the California Public Utility Commission that grant them increases so that they can be competitive. But the utilities can't compete with solar. And so now we've got the bill coming to Utility and Energy Committee to stamp out solar. Well, we've got a mandate in California to have all electric cars by 2035. And they can't figure out how to do that because there's not enough energy being generated. At the same time, they're shooting themselves in the foot in Sacramento by stamping down solar only for self-serving purposes of the utility companies.
You know, one of California's biggest exports is solar on really hot days, because when the sun shines and there's too much of it, it literally generates so much electricity that if they don't send it out of the state and pay other states to take it, our grid will collapse. So instead of investing in these dead-end last century technologies like nuclear, what they should do is look forward and find ways of storing the energy, whether it's battery storage or hydro storage. There's all sorts of ways to store energy as it's generated. And we need to beef up our infrastructure so that we can accept all this free sunshine and turn it into electricity so we can keep the lights on at night. We don't need nuclear because we've got sunshine out here. That's a claim that almost no other state can make.
You know, years ago, the late Barbara George, who was so intently focused on the California Public Utilities Commission and their manipulations, she told me that the way the solar percentage of energy generation in California was figured was that only energy that was channeled through the grid was counted, but that rooftop solar, which was a closed system and it went from your roof, it went into your house, and that's how you did it, that was not counted in the total. So in actuality, solar accounts for much more of the generation of electricity in the state than we have been led to believe.
Wow, that's really a profound observation. I wasn't aware of that, but it makes sense.
Well, Libby, this reaches back to like the late 70s or 80s. I said at that time in a joking manner that we're only going to have solar until they can figure out how to tax the sun. And that's what we've got, you know? Unfortunately, that is what we have. It's so short-sighted. I mean, that's the thing. Really, what we're talking about here overall is the lack of leadership. Because it's so short-sighted, even with regard to alternative energy sources like hydrogen. You know, I was involved as an academic partner with Arnold Schwarzenegger's California Hydrogen Highway, which was not a highway at all. It was a fueling infrastructure. And who was on those calls but the oil industry? And of course, what did they want to do? They wanted to siphon off hydrogen from a petroleum source. I would remind them every time that Arnold was requiring, the legislature in California was funding this only for renewable sources of hydrogen. What's happened next? Well, let's take this conversation offline, you know, without Nina, because they wanted to talk about how they could leverage the petroleum industry with hydrogen. And we don't have a leadership here in California that's willing to take an investment in our infrastructure. Look, we don't have any storage for water when it rains. How ridiculous is that? We need people to be educated that are drafting these policies and know what the heck they're talking about, other than just be beholden to their funding sources.
Another aspect of this is the cost. Nuclear electrons are incredibly expensive. Solar energy is very cheap. It can be as low as a few cents a kilowatt hour. With nuclear, it can be 10, 20, 30 cents. It's very expensive. And then we're saddled with nuclear waste that's deadly for hundreds of thousands of years after the electricity is generated. So there's a cost going forward, not just to future generations economically, but it's a risk to their health.
Public Watchdogs is quite a litigious organization. We've had several federal lawsuits. We've been fortunate to have two of those go to the Ninth Circuit, highest you could go, one that went to the Supreme Court. And I bring that up because we've got a legal situation here where we've got an existing law in California that prohibits any new nuclear. And we've got these knuckleheads in Sacramento that think that we're not looking when they try to sneak through nuclear power peppered all over this state from the land use perspective. We're talking about another legal situation here. That's what it's always coming down to because they could never do the right thing. So, we got to take them to court.
Do we have any heroes in the state legislature who understand what this is about and are fighting against it as well?
Not to our knowledge, because it hasn't gone to utility and energy, but I can tell you right now, there's some really key assembly representatives sitting in both San Diego and Orange County that are going to hear it when it goes to that committee, because this should not be tolerated. But, we have a lot of political performance going on in California.
What do you mean by political performing?
Prime example is what happened in AB 205. Where they're so outraged by their constituents telling them, and I'm quoting an elected representative that stood in front of a podium and said that his constituents were, quote unquote, so pissed off that they were going to have to initiate a new piece of legislation to tamp down the original legislation. All they did was introduce legislation under a new number, didn't give it any public hearing, any public input, passed it through as law, which you can look on your electric bill for that fixed fee. And that is evidence that this AB 205 a couple of years ago got passed through. I call that political performance, where they came out in a news conference, a press conference, saying they were going to fix this problem. That's not what they did. They performed in front of their constituents long enough for their constituents to believe and trust that they were doing the right thing. And if they were doing the right thing, none of us would have that fixed fee on our electric bill today.
Yeah, electric power is political power. It's the most powerful lobby in the state of California. And for us to defeat that electric power, basically, the people have to exercise the power of their vote, the power of the phone, and the power of the petition that we've put online. Things will put pressure.
Let's not forget that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has been captured by the industry it's supposed to regulate, and that's no secret. So those two things combined, the utility industry in this country is a very powerful lobby group. And then you combine that with the NRC, it's been captured by the industry it's supposed to regulate, and now you've got the NRC doing nothing but regulating by exemption. Do your job. That's what we're expecting of the NRC, and that's not what we're getting.
Of course, Nuclear Hot Seat will be posting a link up to the petition from Public Watchdog so people will have an easy way to get to it. Beyond that, phone calls, email, letters, what else, if anything, can we do to organize against this bill, which could have deadly consequences all over the state?
We're reaching out to every single organization that has an entire group behind them to leverage everybody to step up so that this thing doesn't go past the Natural Resources Committee. And if it goes to utility and energy, we want to stop it in its tracks, period, because the long-range consequences of what we're talking about is life-threatening.
Yeah, and if there's any groups out there that are, if someone's listening, yeah, please reach out to us. And, let's talk about joining this movement because we need a show of overwhelming public force right now.
Yeah. And we know your audience is informed. It's not like we've got to explain this from square one. Let's get busy and do something about it. This will be posted on San Clemente Green's website, I'm sure. The petition link will be posted on Samuel Lawrence Foundation website and any others that want to join this collaborative partnership, because this is bigger than any one of us, Libby. It's bigger than any one of us.
It's the battle for the future.
Yes.
This may be a side thing, but maybe not. Have you been working in conjunction with Jim Hettle and Mary Beth Brangen, who made the film SOS, the San Onofre Syndrome?
Yes, we were just in a conference call with them this morning.
I know that they are going to have a screening of the film coming up in Newport Beach, and they have other screenings planned around certainly Southern California, if not the entire state. Would that be a place where you might do presentations or have materials available?
Well, we're already talking with them about that. We'll be participating in the July 8th, I believe it is, up in Newport Beach. And that's quite timely too, because we've got two assembly representatives in Newport Beach that need to be informed if they're already not. And we'll make sure that happens.
So, is there anything else you can think of that we haven't covered that you would like to get across at this time?
The thing that I've been reflecting on is San Onofre has been shut down for what, 12 years now? 14 years now? Look how fast time goes. And we're reflecting back on over a decade of fighting every little sneaky thing about San Onofre for 12 or 14 years. I just want to point out to your audience that this keeps marching forward, and it's going to keep marching forward with or without them. But without them, they're not going to get what they need or want. The public needs to participate in this process. And we're trying to make it easy for the public because we know that when they hold these meetings or hearings or votes at 2:30 in the afternoon on a Tuesday, most of your listeners are going to probably be at work. And so one of the reasons that we do what we do is to ensure that those people that are taxpayers, ratepayers, paying for everything, including these knuckleheads that are writing this legislation, that they have a level of accountability, and we try to give them access to that accountability with them not having to take off a day of work, not having to fly to Sacramento, which a number of people from San Diego on Monday did, Levy. There was 15 or 20 people on another bill that had to fly to Sacramento, and they testified that I had to take a day off, I had to take a day of vacation, I paid for the ticket to fly to Sacramento on my own dime. These were people that testified this past Monday on another piece of legislation because there was no way to just call in and express public input. You're going to look at every single public agency in California, whether it's the Coastal Commission, state lands, a county, city, they're all reducing public input from like 3 to 1 minute. Well, why is that? They don't have the tolerance to listen to the public that's paying for everything. What's wrong with this picture? And if people don't speak up, they're going to continue to do it until they cut out public input altogether. And we can't live with that.
I'd just like to say that the nuclear industry's dream is a kind of nuclear utopia where there's little nuclear reactors everywhere. There's one at the end of your cul-de-sac, there's one at your kid's school, there's one that powers the local stadium, one that powers the local strip mall. They want to expand nuclear power and make it into a huge revenue source, and they still haven't solved the problem of public safety with operating nuclear power in a distributed manner like that. And the most important issue is what do they do with the nuclear waste?
And the past isn't a prologue on the radioactive nuclear waste situation. I don't know what is.
We will certainly stay in touch with you and find out any further developments on this. I live in California, and so this is personal to me. Got my list of phone calls to make and letters to write or emails to write. I'll also have the link to the Public Watchdog's petition up on the website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode. And for now, thank you so much for the work that you're doing on behalf of all of us and for explaining it so well here today on Nuclear Hot Seat.
Thank you, Libby.
We'll keep you posted.
You better. Charles Lang Lee and Nina Babiarz, co-founders and co-leaders of Public Watchdogs. Their website is publicwatchdogs.org, and watchdog is plural. There's an S in there. And we'll have a link up to the petition they spoke about and that we all need to sign. It will be on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 722. For clarity, the San Onofre nuclear reactors were shut down in 2013, which is 12 years ago. And if you're in Southern California, Public Watchdogs and San Clemente Green are co-sponsoring a screening of the award-winning documentary, SOS, The San Onofre Syndrome. It will take place at the gorgeous Lido Theater in Newport Beach on Sunday, June 1st at 5 p.m. Charles, Nina, and the filmmakers will be there to answer questions during an after-screening talk. And if you want more information on upcoming screenings of the film or to book it in your area, the website is sanonofresyndrome.org.
Activists, shout out.
We talk about the need for young activists. Here's a great example of one stepping front and center. Nora Schroeder, a junior at Kirkwood High School in Kirkwood, Missouri, produced a video, The Radioactive Waste Crisis, a Hidden Hazard, and was one of the second prize high school Central Division winners in C-SPAN Classroom's Student Cam Documentary Contest. It was on the 2025 theme, Your Message to the President, What Issue is Most Important to You or Your Community. We will have a link up to this award-winning documentary on our website, nuclearhotseat.com, under this episode, number 722, with full congratulations to Nora Schroeder. And now it's time to grab your milk and cookies, because here's another story from our collective activist past, presented by Jack Cohen Joppa of the Nuclear Resistor. Missouri is the show-me state. And the Missouri Peace Planters did just that when they repeatedly occupied multiple nuclear missile silos in the summer of 1988, causing a furor that helped raise awareness of this hidden danger at the height of the Cold War.
West of the Mississippi River, across the American heartland, nuclear missiles have long been hidden in farmers' fields like razors in a loaf of bread. That disturbing metaphor drew about 50 Midwesterners together in the summer of 1988 to talk and pray about the nuclear missiles in their midst. In recent years, more than a dozen nuclear abolitionists had entered the sites of the buried silos across several states and had gone to jail, including Plowshares activists who had damaged the silo lids and above-ground instruments. And these protests were not just symbolic. With every action at a silo, even simple trespass, that missile is taken offline, if only temporarily. Sam Day, one of the organizers of the retreat, told some of their story for a book he edited in 1989 entitled Prisoners on Purpose, A Peacemaker's Guide to Jails and Prisons. Over a long weekend in Milwaukee with a vision of broadening participation and nonviolent direct actions at the silos, the group engaged with the philosophical and tactical issues of resistance. They role-played possible scenarios, from the action itself through arrest, jail, trial, and imprisonment, and they emerged with a plan to touch the nation's conscience by putting protesters on top of multiple nuclear missile silos. They called it the Missouri Peace Planting 88, and their plan marked a significant escalation in the numbers of people involved, in the breadth of preparation, and in the openness of its summons to nonviolent resistance. At dawn on Monday, August 15th, a caravan of cars drove south from Kansas City, dropping off teams of activists and observers at missile launch sites across three counties. At precisely 7 a.m., all the peace planters went to work. Some scaled fences and others cut padlocks on the gates, and within minutes, 14 activists stood directly above 10 different Minuteman II missile silos. They reclaimed the land for peace. They planted seeds, hung banners, and left personal artifacts and family photos. At one silo, a white-haired grandmother climbed the fence as television and still cameras recorded the scene. And at another launch site, Sam Day, dressed as a clown, strolled onto the silo lid and tied balloons to the instruments. Alerted by remote sensors, Air Force security teams scrambled to each site. The peace planters were all soon arrested, along with a few of their support people. They were taken to the county jails and released later that day. The Air Force was caught unprepared, and they chose not to prosecute, deciding instead to issue letters warning the offenders not to do it again. But their plan was to persist. The very next day, Tuesday, six of the 14 returned to the silo numbered C-11, where they held a prayer vigil. After a tense but peaceful standoff with Air Force security, they were again arrested, given a second ban and bar letter, and released. On Wednesday, five repeaters and four other resistors returned, this time to silo N-2, where the scene played out again. And on Friday, the peace planters held a press conference on the steps of the Kansas City Federal Courthouse, where they declared their intention to continue the campaign, and nine of them ceremoniously burned the ban and bar letters they had received. Dwayne Bean and Kathy Kelly were arrested again at Silo M8 on August 24th, and again released with just a warning. On August 28th, these two returned with two more women, cut the locks, and entered yet another silo. Well, now the feds changed their tune. Bean and Kelly were jailed on charges of trespass and destruction of property until their arraignment 10 days later. And in short order, 15 peace planters faced federal charges, some for as many as five consecutive actions. Their trials began that fall, and by the following July, a year after that weekend retreat in Milwaukee, all but one of the Missouri peace planters had been convicted, fined, and locked up. Many had refused probation. Each of them were or would be serving time in jail or federal prison, and the last of the group would eventually serve 2 months in jail. Most served the maximum 6-month sentence for trespass, and a few were imprisoned for 12 to 26 months of consecutive terms for multiple arrests and charges. And those buried nuclear missiles? The Air Force recently began silo upgrades intending to replace the Minutemen with the new Sentinel ICBMs. Maybe it's time to be planting some more peace before all these new nuclear missiles take root. This has been Jack Cohen-Joppa for Nuclear Hot Seat, with another story for you from the Nuclear Resistor Archives to inspire your activism today.
Thanks, Jack. This has been Nuclear Hot Seat for Tuesday, April 29, 2025. If you'd like to get Nuclear Hot Seat delivered via email every week, it's the easiest way to never miss a single episode. And you can sign up. It's free. Do it on your favorite podcast channel or cut to the chase. Go to nuclearhotseat.com. There's a yellow opt-in box that pops up. You can't miss it. Put in your first name and an email address, and every week you will get one. Only one email from us. We don't bug you, but it will contain a link to that week's show and a short description of its content. Now, you can contribute to our content as well. If you have a story lead, a hot tip, or a suggestion of someone to interview, send an email to info@nuclearhotseat.com. And remember, if you can go to Nuclear Hot Seat and donate, we really and always need your help. Anything at all will be really appreciated. And as always, I'm grateful that you're listening and that you care. This episode of Nuclear Hot Seat is copyright 2025, Libby Halevi and Hardestry Communications. All rights reserved, but fair use allowed, as long as you cite the program, website, names of any guests whose comments you use, and me. For now, this is Libby Halevi of Nuclear Hot Seat, reminding you, we can always come up with the date that a nuclear emergency begins, but we can never come up with the date that it's over, because once it starts, it's never over. There you have it, your weekly nuclear wake-up call. So whatever you do, do not go back to sleep, because we are all in the nuclear hot seat.
Nuclear hot seat. What are those people thinking? Nuclear hot seat. What have those boys been drinking? Nuclear hot seat. The corium is sinking. Our time to act is shrinking, but our activists are linking. Nuclear hot seat. It's the bomb.